The Flatus Show is brought to you by Douglas Brothers Apple Pectin Pea Powder Organic Soap, cleansing and rejuvenating hands and faces since 1923.
This podcast is a proud member of the Network of One Podcast. And also the Freak Network at thefreaknetwork.com.
On today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 129, birthdays, newspapers, snowstorms, and secrets. All of this and more. The Flatus Show with Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Yum. Welcome, kids. Welcome to the Flatus Show, your weekly variety show podcast. Hold on. Your weekly variety show podcast where I do all sorts of things. Play the ukulele for you, and give you all sorts of interesting things to listen to, and keep you updated on what the FBI is doing. Giving you all the favorite Crisco recipes, and a special thanks to Douglas Brothers for sponsoring my show. And I just want to say, you know, they're makers of the Apple Pectin and Pea Powder Soap. Organic soap, that is, which has been cleansing and rejuvenating skin since 1923. So, go check them out. Buy soap. But thank you for listening to The Flatus Show. I always appreciate it. Okay, let's talk. Because, you know, that's what I do in the beginning here, is talk. And talking is what I do. And this is an audio... You know, there's not video going on here, like some podcasters. That'd be Yeast Radio and her Ustream. She fucked me up the other day. I went on there and I go to her page and expecting to, you know, watch her live. You know, live. But she doesn't do anything on the weekends, I don't think, as I found out. So I see this video playing and she's like, you know, playing around with her pussy or whatever. That's rude. But that's what she does, you know? And so Madge is there, her computer, and she's playing some stuff. And I'm like, what's that music on? I'm typing this thing in. I'm like, try to type some stuff in. She looks like she's reading something, and she's reading it, but she doesn't respond. So it ends, and it says, you can click the next clip to watch. This has been pre-recorded. I'm like, fuck. I just spent 5 minutes watching a pre-recorded thing. I want to see live. So anyway, I actually signed up for Ustream too, but I don't know how to make it work. So if you go to Ustream and look for Kenty 1964, The Flatus Show, I don't know. I've even forgotten the passwords by this time. But anyway, I was trying to do that, but I don't know if I would want to do that regularly. But it was fun, and I'll tell you. The other day I was on Skype with Tim and Annette. They're the host and proprietors of For Whatever Reason podcast. And Skype has video now. So we were chatting and videoing, and it was really good. You know, it looked real good. So I was able to do that. So if any of you guys or gals or anybody wants to talk to Kenty on Skype, and they have a video, we can talk to each other and look at each other. Isn't that interesting? So, that's what I have to say, okay? So that means Matt and Ouija, they're hosts of the Big Gay Sex Show, and they have their own podcast each. So, hold on, let me look at my notes here. Okay, I did that already. I have to cross off my notes. I'm not doing them in order, so I have to make sure I, you know, whatever. But Yeah, Matt and Ouija, we're talking about getting together on Skype. I'd like to, you know, talk to you guys and, you know, interview you for the Flatus show. And if you have video, that'd be great, you know. But, you know, it can be just an audio interview, whatever. Whatever, Mary. But it'd be great fun. I was free this weekend to do it, but actually I ended up not being too free because Johnny is away in New York with his friend from Switzerland. Actually, he's from Argentina. He's actually from Argentina and Switzerland. Both. I think he's originally from Argentina. But actually, he's of Polish descent, living in Argentina. Or lived in Argentina. I don't know. Whatever. He's one of these international types. And they spent some time in New York buying perfume and going to some shows. Which one show they saw, actually the only show they saw, was Four Boys Naked from the Waist Down. And it is, I think, four guys naked from the waist down. They're naked on stage singing and dancing. And you get over the nakedness real quick because it starts off with nakedness right away. It's like, you know what? This is it. This is what God gave us. Penis, gristle, balls, you know. And they do their thing, you know. Sing and dance. Sing and swing and fling while the junk is flying all about. So, hold on. Which leads me to, Daniel, as you know, is a friend of John's, and he listens to my show too. And he also listens to Bored Beyond Belief with host Joe G, the ever fabulous sociologist, the internet's first sociologist podcasting sociologist from Columbus, Ohio. Joe G, listen to his podcast, Bored Beyond Belief, and, before you listen to the latest one, make sure you get your list of celebrity death, your celebrity death list ready to see if you can match or beat Joe G and his friend Teresa, gal pal Teresa from Los Angeles. So, okay, hold on. This is bad when I just, it's actually good because it's natural, the natural flow of things. So Johnny is in New York. Last week he gave a voice message and he had a quiz. And I want to play that quiz again because no one answered the quiz. So here's the quiz.
Here's a little quiz for you and your listeners. What product in the 50s and maybe in the 60s, I don't think now, was an alternative brand to Crisco, as Bufferin is an alternative brand to Bayer Aspirin, say? What was that? And another, in the same vein, what was at the same time an alternative brand to SOS?
Okay, does anybody know what was the alternative brand to Crisco in the 50s, popular brand? And also, what was the alternative brand to, what was it? Whatever, SOS pads. I think SOS, yeah. Okay, so email me at flatusshow@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, or call me at 206-3391, whatever, hold on. Let me get my number here. 206-984-3617. That's 206-984-3617. And you can leave a voice comment, which I'd appreciate, or send me a voice comment at flatusshow@gmail.com. As you know, I accept all sorts of interactions with my listeners because I love you. But not only because I love you, because it's not just because I love you. It's more, it's beyond love. It goes beyond love. Okay, it's beyond love. It's beyond love, because it would be an orgy if it was all only about love. An orgy of listeners and me. Just think about me. Ooh, it's getting me all hot thinking about it. All my 68 listeners, that'd be a big orgy. Okay, somebody's ass would be tired after that. Okay, so Johnny's quiz, okay. Next, we go to talking about bottoms. No, he's really not a bottom. And I'm just joking about that because I'll explain. Matthew from Spanking B. Arthur on the Big Gay Sex Show, keeps on talking about he's not ready to try anal sex yet. So listen to the Big Gay Sex Show. You know what? The mystery of anal sex is, I don't know. There's no mystery to anal sex. Okay, it's not is it's here I'm talking about anal sex. Whatever, right? if you're ever in a situation where you want to have anal sex and you're the receiver, don't be a tight end. Get it? Relax, relax, and use lots of Crisco. Actually, when I say Crisco, I mean any lubricant, because you really need to be relaxed and you have to have a lot of lubricant. You always use rubbers, okay? Always wrap the wiener, okay? Because you don't want any of that, you know, HIV crap, okay? You never know where your partner's been, regardless of how pleasurable it is, okay? Unless you're a bug chaser, then, you know, don't use the grease and tighten up. And, you know, make yourself bleed as much as possible and not enjoy it, you know, because you just want to die anyway. Okay, bug chaser. Have any of my listeners bug chasers? Okay, you need to see a psychiatrist. That's what I have to say. That's not okay. Okay, just like these anorexic people who are on the internet. Apple slice Anna. Honey, you need more than an apple slice. You have to think about this scientifically. You know, this is the age of belief. You have to get out of that, get that out of your pretty little head. You know, no one likes, well, I shouldn't say no one likes, that's self-image, right? Whatever. Okay, honey, just love yourself. I love you, okay? I love you, okay? You always can rely on the Filet Show. Go get yourself a cake and eat some cake. But anyway, it's not just cake. You need to eat protein. You need to build your muscles. Because you're going to, you know, your heart pumps. It's made of a muscle. It needs protein. Okay, honey? You need to have nutrients. I know, I'm speaking to, like, an anorexic who I don't even know listens to my show. But anyway, be careful, okay? Eat right. Okay? Okay? Because I want to see you. I want to talk to you. I want to Skype with you. Okay? And I want to see you succeed. Okay? Don't let the bitches of the world make you sick, okay? Because it just isn't worth it. Okay, so where am I at? Matthew Spanking B. Arthur. We were talking about. Oh, yeah, he's not ready for anal sex or doesn't want anal sex. I don't know. But anyway, the most important thing about Matthew is he loves Bewitched too. I don't know if I talked about this Christmas I got for my birthday, one or the other. John bought me the first 5 seasons of Bewitched. Originally, I wanted the first few seasons in black and white because I think they're supposed to be, they were originally black and white. You know, I'm a purist, you know. I even watch it in a 3-to-4 ratio. You know, I don't, if I have a widescreen TV, but I have to actually change the setup so it looks like the original aspect ratio of the show because that's the way I am. However, they were bought used, so Johnny got all, they were all colorized, but they look terrific, so I don't care so much. I'm not that bad. I mean, I don't care anymore. You know, they're great. So I'm still on the first season. And Aunt Clara and her doorknob collection. I just love Aunt Clara. I was on Twitter. And I said how I loved Aunt Clara. And then I went and, you know, worked. Actually, it was after the cake. Let me get back to the cake because that has to do with AJ. The Aunt Clara, he says he loves Aunt Clara too. So Aunt Clara is the best. Go watch Bewitched. It's a fantastic show, and I love it. The first season, I think, is like A++. Now, I still have the second and third and fourth and fifth seasons to watch. It'll take me a while because Johnny doesn't like watching The Bewitched, so I only get to watch, you know, once, one or two at a time. And but that's okay. You know, that spreads it out. Spreads the joy out. What I am waiting for is the third season of Family to come out in DVD. And the second volume of Soap. The second volume of Mary Hartman. So I can't wait for those two because I love them both. I have the first 2 seasons of Family. They came as a set. I love Family. I love it. Let's see here. So anyway, that's Banking B. Arthur with Matt. Okay, honey, all you need is Crisco. Joking, honey, joking. Okay. Twitter. Talking about Twitter, I was on Twitter. I go on occasionally. I don't sit there all day because I don't, you know, I understand a little bit. It's interesting to read, you know, little bits. So I was on there, and AJ from cuppoftea.us, he is the proprietor of Rainbow Pod Squad. And they have a whole bunch of different, podcasts he has gotten together under his umbrella. So we were talking, I said about how I was baking a cake, and he goes, "You don't have to bake shit. You just buy some ho-hos." And what was really funny about that is when I was getting my baking goods, I had to go get some flour. Oh my God, snow just fell off the roof across the street. I was getting the baking goods, the flour, and I walked by the junk food aisle, and they had these Hostess Twinkies. No, not Twinkies. Hostess cupcakes, orange-flavored cupcakes. Oh, I was like, I love those things. I mean, sometimes, if I haven't had sugar for a long time, because I don't generally eat sugar. I try to avoid it. Except this past week, because I made a cake, which was like full of sugar. But it was delicious. I didn't eat the whole thing, okay? But it is delicious. I'm going to take some in the work. But it's such a great cake. Well, let me get back to the Twinkies or whatever, the cupcakes. So when I haven't had sugar for a long time and I pass them, I'm like drawn to them like a zombie is drawn to brains. And it's like, oh my God. And, I buy it and I get into the car and I rip that package open and shove that damn cupcake down my throat. Oh, and it's my weakness is Hostess cupcakes with the orange flavored ones. So I make my own cakes because I love baking. And so I make homemade cakes. And I actually designed a cake based on baker's percentages. And that's a new thing. If you look up baker's percentages, you'll find out all about that. And this guy, this website, he gave formulas for, he gave formulas for what like a basic cake is using baker's percentages. And that's all by weight based on the flour. So if you have a recipe in baker's percentages, the flour is always 100%, right? And then everything is according to that. So if you have a pound of flour, right, and the recipe calls for 80% sugar, then it would be 80% of a pound's worth of sugar, whatever that is. Okay? Get it? Get it, huh? Percentages. So it's very interesting, this website, and also the way they mix the cake. It's different from any other recipe as I've ever read. So I made this little an 8-inch round cake last night. And I was really good. I let it cool, and I didn't have any last night, and I put it away. I put it into a bag. So you just leave – actually, a cake is better if it's been, baked, cooled. Taken out of the pan, cooled, and then wrap it up. I wrap it up into a plastic freezer bag and then let it sit. And it really develops overnight. It really develops, and it's best the next day. And so I cut it, and it's like a perfect – it's perfect. It's dense but not too dense. It has a nice crumb. It would really – I mean – it was a little too sweet, and that's the thing, is that they said that in cakes, you're supposed to have one, if flour, whatever the flour is, you match the sugar or have more sugar. I did the matching of the sugar, and I was like, it was a little too sweet for me. So I've looked at other recipes since then to see what the ratio is, and I've seen a lot of recipes where the sugar is less than 100%, so I have to look at the formulas and see how low I can go in the sugar content to make a really good cake to, make sure it, browns nice and stuff. But I used dried milk, which is a secret, and dried egg whites, which is another secret to making cakes, and Crisco, of course. I love Crisco. I'm almost through my Crisco, can of Crisco. I've been using it and using it and using it. I love it. Love baking. And it really does well for baking. So, anyhow, I almost said something. Anyhow, sequel. Okay, last week I asked everybody if they knew anything about sequel. And Richard of Annapolis, Maryland, he emailed me, and he is such a buddy. He gave me the lowdown on sequel, and so I am all set. Thank you, Richard. Thank you so much. And I got your email with the link to that web-based thing, which I might use. But as soon as I can, as soon as I know what I need to learn, I'm looking through the books now. But as soon as I get some direction, start, try to find the direction of where I, what I need to learn for work, then I can start using it on the web. But that's really great, and I think it'll be useful. Okay, let's see here. Okay, that's done. Okay, that's done. Okay, I'm also building new sets for the Flatus stage. You know, my, you know, the web page, right? I have the Flatus stage. And I am building new sets for it. So I'm going to take some more pictures of myself and put them in there to, like, you know, make a new set. Just a show. It will be on my Flickr page. You can actually go to my Flickr page. Links are on the podcast page of my website. So if you go to theflatusshow.com, click on the microphone that will take you to the podcast page. That's actually just theflatusshow.blogspot.com. And then if you scroll down on the right, you'll see the Flickr button, and just click it, and it will take you to my Flickr page, and you'll see one picture there with the new some new sets for the Flatus stage. So I was thinking it would be really great if my listeners could send me pictures of themselves, full pictures, 4.5 by 6 inches tall. Try to get your head and your feet into that 4 by, you know, like at the top, like have your head at the top of the picture, like near the top, and so that your so that the whatever showing of you is, you know, like between 5 and 5.5 inches, like total tall, okay, and can see your whole body. Also, nothing like too like intricate, like, you know, with your fingers, with your fingers spread out, because I can't, you know, cut those out. So, like, you know, solid finger on your waist, you can keep it to your legs. But I was, you know, going to put you onto the Flatus stage and, you know, take pictures of you. So anybody, any takers, you know, bring, send a picture of yourself or an avatar of yourself that is will fit on a 4.5, whatever, 4 by 6 inch. 6 inches tall, 4 inches wide picture, JPEG or whatever, and I'll set you up on stage. It's also good that if the person takes a picture of you, right, for this, is that they are sort of taking the picture at your chest, looking at your chest, so when you're looking forward, it looks like you're actually looking off the stage. Okay. So if you guys and gals want to do that, that'd be really terrific. And we can have everybody on the stage, and I can, it'll be like, you know, Abbey Road or whatever, Magical Mystery Tour, whatever. You know, all of us on the stage. But actually, probably I couldn't fit 68 people on the stage. It'll have to be in batches. But we can do plays. I can use you to do plays with. You know, we can do, put on the Doll's House or something, or Ibsen. How's that? Last but not least is a big happy birthday to Randy of the Two Guys, One Brain podcast. Also, a happy birthday to Kiko of Visitronics podcast, Visitronics Radio or whatever. Visitronics, you can't, he's all, they're all my, he's on my, actually, yeah, both of them are on my Facebook. So if you go to my Facebook, you'll see them in the podcast thing. Randy doesn't have, doesn't belong to Facebook, but If you go to my page, the Facebook page, you can, you know, see Visitronics and Kiko. And Jeff in L.A.'s kid is born today. Today is, by the way, February 24th, I think. Is that what it is? Sunday, February 24th. So happy birthday to you boys. And also, because tomorrow is the 25th, that is Nanette's birthday. She is Nanette of For Whatever Reason podcast. She turns 40. So, that's okay, honey. 40's not so bad. Actually, I had a nervous breakdown. No, I didn't have a nervous breakdown. I had my midlife crisis. 6 months later, I started podcasting, and I haven't stopped since. That's how I dealt with my insecurities, realizing that I hadn't done anything with my life up to that point, figuring I better do something because I'm halfway to death. Or less, you know, the way my family is. So anyway, you know, I'm going to try to get out to I'm going to try to see if I can get out to Vegas in August to see all you kids, all you cats, and or whoever's going to Vegas. Probably I'll end up going and no one will be there. I'll be like, hi, How you doing? Hi, you impersonate Elvis, huh? That's interesting. That's so unique. So, yeah, so I'm going to try to get to Vegas in August for the podcast convention or whatever. And I'm going to try to get to Vancouver, or to Washington and Portland again in June. I say try. I mean, I really am planning on doing it, but we haven't gotten anything at work to allow us to choose our vacation. And I need to know that before I can go. So, Kai. So make cakes. Oh, the cake I made last night is the birthday cake for Randy, Kiko, Jeff and LA's kid, and Annette. So, anyway, and that's it. Happy birthday. So everybody have a piece of birthday cake for these boys and gals. This gal. Boys and this gal. So, on with the show.
In 1963, Wayne Davis had a college degree and was an officer in the Army. He then began training as an FBI special agent.
Coming out of the military, I was in halfway decent shape, so the physical aspects were not a problem.
The FBI has thousands of African-American employees, not too many back then. Davis is one of the first through the FBI Academy.
14 or 15-week training period was really, really kind of a revelation. Very heavy on firearms.
As part of Black History Month, we look back at Davis's 25 years as an agent. He worked a lot of cases, solved a bunch of bank robberies, and says if you have a college degree, think about the FBI.
If a person really wants to be part of an elite organization and work with the best people doing a much-needed job, then I would say, see if you can qualify.
Wayne Davis became the special agent in charge in Philadelphia. I'm Neil Schiff of the Bureau, and that's what's happening at the FBI this week.
Zoroastrianism, spark of the sacred fire. 5 in the palace of King Vishtaspa. Zoroaster came from Mount Sabalon enthusiastically ready to proclaim to the people the truth about good and evil. But the people of Iran were not as ready to listen to him. The people of Iran were accustomed to gods and idols that were actual to them. But the God of good and the spirit of evil that Zoroaster preached were not to be seen, nor to be heard, nor to be touched. And whatever the people of that day could not see with their eyes, or touch with their hands, or hear with their ears, that they would not believe. Not even Zoroaster's family would believe in his teachings. For 10 long years he went about in search of believers, and in all that time he won over only one follower, his own cousin. Zoroaster was already 40 years old, and his hair was graying at the temples. "Your teachings are too hard for people to understand," said Zoroaster's cousin. "Yes," Zoroaster reflected sadly. "If you could get the attention of the educated people who are trained to understand difficult thoughts and ideas, then you'd get a hearing." "You're right," said Zoroaster. "And who were the most learned in the land, if not the king and the queen and the rest of the royal family?" To them, Zoroaster decided to go and explain his new religion. He immediately started out for Bactria, where lived King Kavai Vishtaspa in the city of Balkh. With the dust of the long journey still upon his shoes, Zoroaster appeared at the gates of the royal palace and said to the guardian of the gates, "Go and tell the king Vishtaspa that I, Zoroaster Spitama, prophet of the one wise Lord, have come to see him and to teach him the ways of good and evil." The guardian of the gates thought that Zoroaster was an impudent beggar, and he burst into laughter. "Go and do as I bid you do," Zoroaster commanded. The guardian of the gates stopped laughing, for there was something in Zoroaster's commanding voice and in his fiery eyes that frightened him, but he still did not move from his post. Zoroaster then took out a ball of fire, so one story tells, and held it in his outstretched hand. "Let this be a sign to you that I come in the name of the one wise Lord," Zoroaster said. The guardian of the gates ran at once to the throne room where the king sat on his throne surrounded by his wise men, priests, and magician. A truly marvelous man has come wishing to see you, your majesty. He claims to be the prophet of the one wise lord, and in his hand he holds a ball of fire that burns, yet does not burn his hand. Send him in, the king commanded. Zarathustra walked into the throne room and said in a firm voice, I, Zarathustra Spitama, prophet of the one wise lord, have come to you, mighty king, to turn your heart from vain and evil idols towards the glory of the true and wise and eternal lord. What sign have you to offer that your words are true? The king asked. I teach the word of truth against the word of falsehood. If you or your wise men wish to question me, I shall answer and prove your ways of idol worship to be wrong and shadowed with the darkness of night, and the way of the one wise lord, Ahura Mazda, to be good and bright as the light of day. Wise men, priests, and magicians, the king addressed his men, question this stranger on his teachings, and I shall sit in judgment and decide who is right and who is wrong. But if you find my words to be true, said Zarathustra to the king, promise that you will abandon the dark ways of the idol worship and follow the shining road of the wise lord. I promise, said the king. Then the debate between Zarathustra and the king's wise men, priests, and magicians began.
You stand convicted of assholism.
Today's asshole of the week, actually, is two parts. The first asshole of the week are people who walk in the middle of the street during a severe winter snowstorm. It's bad enough driving on roads that have not been plowed, where you're, you know, slipping and sliding. But then you have assholes, adults with their children, walking in the middle of the street. Hello. Stay on the... Well, you can't even stay on the sidewalk. Just stay in your fucking house. This isn't a winter wonderland, especially at, you know, 5 o'clock when everybody's trying to drive home. God, good God. Okay, so they're the first assholes, especially in small towns, because these people think they have the divine right of kings and can do whatever they want, and they're just stupid. Anybody who lives in a small town will know that. Okay, the second is of this two-part assholism is similar, and it's snowstorms again. It is the Boston drivers near Government Center. Stop at the stoplight. When it's red, red means stop. Stop means put your foot on the brake, and then stop. Meaning you don't move. I can't believe people rushing through the red lights, especially in the winter. People are trying to cross. It's the only way to get across to come, you know, to get the subways and stuff, right? And you have these, you know, assholes, these Boston drivers. I mean, Boston drivers are assholes anyway, right? But especially during a winter storm. I mean, they all think they all think that... you know, since they survived the blizzard of 78, they wear it like this badge. I was here at the blizzard of 78. That. Who the hell cares? You know? Get over yourself. That was 30 years ago. Stop driving like maniacs and stop at the red light.
Assholism.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
In America, the press constitutes a singular power, so strangely composed of mingled good and evil that liberty could not live without it, and public order can hardly be maintained against it. It causes political life to circulate through all parts of the vast territory. Its eye is constantly open to detect the secret springs of political designs, and to summon the leaders of all parties in turn to the bar of public opinion. It rallies the interests of the community around certain principles and draws up the creed of every party. In the United States, each separate newspaper exercises but little authority, but the power of the press is second only to that of the people. When Beaumont and I left America in 1832, the American press was on the verge of a great transition. While we were in America, daily newspapers cost 6 cents as a rule. This was too much for the working man. This sixpenny press, as it was called, was edited in the main by and for business institutions and politicians. No one of the 55 newspapers in New York had more than a circulation of 2,000 copies.
Then, suddenly, a year after we left, the great change took place. The penny press was started by the New York Sun in 1833. And what interested the 6 cent public did not interest the penny public. Soon there was a newspaper in the hands of every man in the city, and even of every boy old enough to read. These papers are to be found in every hotel, tavern, counting house, shop, etc. Almost every porter and drayman, while not engaged in his occupation, may be seen with a paper in his hands.
Even after we left America, we were able to follow the American press and to discover the inflated and bombastic claims of the self-confident editors of the penny press. Editors who collected all their own news and wrote the entire paper themselves, such as the celebrated Scottish-born James Gordon Bennett.
May 6, 1835. My first declaration of policy for the New York Herald, price one penny. In debuts of this kind, many talk of principle, political principle, party principle, as a sort of steel trap to catch the public. We openly disdain all steel traps, all principle, as it is called, all party, all politics. Our only guide shall be good, sound, practical common sense, applicable to the business and bosoms of men engaged in everyday life. We shall endeavor to record facts on every public and proper subject, stripped of verbiage and coloring, with comments, when suitable, just, independent, fearless, and good-tempered. The editors of many of the other daily newspapers are heavy speculators in Wall Street and are truly unfit by nature to come to a right conclusion upon any subject. They pervert every public event from its proper hue and coloring to raise one stock and depress another. There is no truth in them.
Every profession, of course, has its class spirit. The characteristics of the American journalist often consist in an open and coarse appeal to the passions of his readers. He abandons principles to assail the characters of individuals, to track them into private life and disclose all their weaknesses and vices. The first American newspaper over which we cast our eyes contained the following article on the President of the United States, Andrew Jackson.
In all this affair, the language of Jackson, the President, has been that of a heartless despot, solely occupied with the preservation of his own authority. Intrigue is his native element. He governs by means of corruption, and his immoral practices will redound to his shame and confusion. His conduct in the political arena has been that of a shameless and lawless gamester.
And this sort of attack is perfectly usual. Any American journalist will tell you the same, will indeed boast of it.
Why shouldn't I boast of it? In America, the press is a mighty power. I share a little of that power.
What, sir, do you do exactly?
I'm a correspondent of one of the New York papers.
Oh, you write the letters from Washington for that paper?
Precisely so. And it's a more difficult task to write a good letter than to make a bad speech.
Well, no doubt of that, sir. You may often be employed in making the best of a bad argument.
What do you mean, sir?
I mean by improving what has been said by a senator or representative.
Not only that, but it is we that give the cue to every argument. The representatives in Congress take up a question as they find it stated in the papers.
And it is you that govern the country.
It's the press, sir, and nothing but the press which governs free people.
But is not the press liable to error?
All human institutions are. But we have such abundant means of correcting and preventing it that it's almost impossible for us to be in the wrong. In the first place, our press has the money by which it can secure the best talents, such as me. And secondly, our people are too cool to be easily wrought into a passion. We are a calculating people.
But your papers are full of personal abuse. Do you think that an advantage?
Not exactly, but it's unquestionably a great help, a seasoning of dull editorials.
Our people have so much ordinary conversation in the course of the day that if it were not for the slander contained in our newspapers, they would not be amused at all. Papers, sir, are the eating, drink, and fuel of the Americans. And on that account, they can never be too hot for them.
But very high seasoning marks a bad taste. I should think the best papers on what is called the aristocratic side would scorn personal abuse.
Quite the reverse, sir, I assure you. It's the only means of attracting notoriety and of pleasing our first people. Besides, it'd be useless to play the part of a gentleman in that respect when all the rest are blackguards. We want strength, sir. Strength and nothing but strength. None of your milk and molasses productions of which a man can make neither head nor tail. If we give a man a beating, we do not want him to get up again. We go the whole hog. When we attack a man, we assail at once his moral, political, religious, and domestic relations. Every little helps, you know. Give a dog a bad name and hang him, says the proverb, and it is just so with our politicians.
On a hill far away stood an old rugged cross, the emblem of suffering and shame. And I love that old cross, where the dearest and best for a world of lost sinners was slain. So I'll cherish the old rugged cross till my trophies at last I lay down. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown. Oh, that old rugged cross, so despised by the world, has a wondrous attraction for me. For the dear Lamb of God left his glory above to bear it to dark Calvary. So I'll cherish the old rugged cross till my trophies at last I lay down. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown. In the old rugged cross, stained with blood so divine, a wondrous beauty I see. For 'twas on that old cross Jesus suffered and died to pardon and sanctify me. So I'll cherish the old rugged cross till my trophies at last I lay down. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown. To the old rugged cross I will ever be true, its shame and reproach gladly bear. Then he'll call me someday to my home far away, where his glory forever I'll share. So I'll cherish the old rugged cross till my trophies at last I lay down. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown.
Indeed, it is pitiful to see what coarse insults, what small vilifications, and what imprudent calumnies fill the journals which serve as party organs.
I have always felt that whatever the divine providence permitted to occur, I was not too proud to report.
To say nothing of the fact that an American newspaper cheerfully prints whatever eccentric notion has entered the editor's head.
The motto of the New York Hawk and Buzzard, Our gossip bird shall keep a bright lookout and show the world what folly is about.
I cannot support John Quincy Adams because he has introduced the billiard table into the president's house for the amusement of its inmates and visitors, thus holding out inducements to engage in a captivating vice, departing from plain Republican manners, imitating the court etiquette of regal power, and furnishing an example to the youth of our country which I conceive can be neither too generally nor too severely reprehended.
I founded the Indianapolis Gazette 60 miles from the nearest post office in a Buckeye log cabin of one room, part of which was occupied for family residence, and the ink was put on with balls of dressed deerskin stuffed with wool.
An editor might have started as a lawyer, a preacher, or a self-educated printer. But as an editor, he's let himself in for an exciting life. If he doesn't speak his mind, people lose respect for him. If he speaks his mind too much, he's in danger of life and limb. Editors openly accuse one another of the most disgusting acts, and the pistol is an editorial accessory not infrequently used. I reckon that's why the hard-pressed newspaper man wears his hat at his desk, so as to be able to make a hurried exit.
The policy of James Gordon Bennett. I want to make the New York Herald the great organ of social life, the prime element of civilization, the channel through which native talent, native genius, and native power may bubble up daily. I shall mix together commerce and business, pure religion and morals, literature and poetry, the drama and dramatic purity, till the Herald shall outstrip everything in the conception of man. The age of trashy novels, of more trashy poems, of more trashy quarterly and weekly literature is rapidly drawing to a close. This is the age of the daily press.
We live by our advertisements. Our advertising columns are open to the public, the whole public, and nothing but the public. We admit any advertisements of anything or any opinion from any persons who will pay the price.
The way these American editors speak of the financing of their newspapers reminds us that in America, writers are brain merchants. Literature is an industry. There is neither a classical school nor a romantic school. There is only the commercial school.
Oh, come, Beaumont.
Well, you know very well, Tocqueville, these writers will edit newspapers, pamphlets, advertisements. They sell ideas as others sell cloth. Their desk is a counter. Their artistic souls are yard goods. Each article has its price, and they will tell you exactly what a printed inspiration costs.
True, up to a point. But some of the editors of the penny press saw their newspapers as superseding all other institutions.
What is to prevent a daily newspaper from being made the greatest organ of social life? Books have had their day. The theaters have had their day. The temple of religion has had its day. A newspaper can be made to take the lead of all these in the great movements of human thought and of human civilization. A newspaper can send more souls to heaven and save more from hell than all the churches or chapels in New York, besides making money at the same time. Let it be tried.
This is a most extravagant view of the function of the press. But even in 1831, before the revolution of the penny newspapers, the American press was the general and universal literature of the country. In the whole of America, there were more than 1,200 newspapers.
Twice as many as in France and England put together.
In New York City, there were 55 newspapers, many of them weekly, but 11 of them were daily. A very remarkable thing for a city of little over 200,000 inhabitants.
But in 1831, no one of these papers dominated the others.
Douglas Brothers Apple Pectin and Pea Powder Soap, made with all natural and organic ingredients. Using apples and peas from Washington State, Douglas Brothers blends a soap formula that gently cleanses your skin while adding tone. This formula has been cleansing and rejuvenating hands and faces since 1923.
Not one sold as many as 2,000 copies.
The ease with which American newspapers can be established produces a multitude of them. Each county has a newspaper. But as competition prevents any considerable profit, persons of much capacity are rarely led to engage in these undertakings. Such is the number of the public prints that even if they were a source of wealth, writers of ability could not be found to direct them all. The journalists of the United States are generally in a very humble position, with a scanty education and a vulgar turn of mind. Not authors, really, but idea mongers.
The editor of the New York Courier and Enquirer, James Watson Webb, was foolish enough yesterday to assault your editor in the street. In the course of the scuffle, he gave me a smart rap over the head. The fellow, no doubt, wanted to let out the never-failing supply of good humor and wit which has created such a reputation for the New York Herald, and appropriate the contents to supply the emptiness of his own thick skull. He did not succeed, however, in rifling my ideas. My ideas in a few days will flow as fresh as ever, and he will find it so to his cost. My damage is a scratch about 3/4 of an inch in length on the third finger of the left hand, which I received from the iron railing I was forced against, and 3 buttons from my vest, which any tailor will reinstate for a sixpence. His loss is a rent from top to bottom of a very beautiful black coat, which cost the ruffian $40, and a blow in the face, which may have knocked down his throat some of his infernal teeth for anything I know. Balance in my favor, $39.94. And the admiration of my vast public.
This editor's report increased his circulation by 9,000 and was therefore satisfactory. The will of the majority is the most general of laws, and it establishes certain habits to which everyone must conform.
An editor must always be with the people, think with them, feel with them, and he need fear nothing. He will always be right, always be strong, always popular, always free. The world has been humbugged long enough by spouters and talkers and conventioners and legislators, et genus omne. This is the editorial age and the most intellectual of all past ages.
Well, the claim of the press to be the prime element of civilization has some point to it. In ages of equality, every man naturally stands alone. He is easily got rid of, and he is trampled on with impunity. At the present time, an oppressed member of the community has therefore only one method of self-defense. He may appeal to the whole nation, and if the whole nation is deaf to his complaint, he may appeal to mankind. The only means he has of making this appeal is by the press. Thus, the liberty of the press is infinitely more valuable among democratic nations than among all others. It is the only cure for the evils that equality may produce. Equality sets men apart and weakens them. But the press places a wonderful weapon within every man's reach, which the weakest and loneliest of them all may use. Equality deprives a man of the support of his connections, but the press enables him to summon all his fellow men to his assistance.
Yes, and every printer feels his responsibility. Do you remember the 4th of July celebrations in Albany? Part of the procession included wagons and floats, and one of the most interesting and one of the most significant was the printer float.
Well, this like is the wagon of the Association of Printers and Albany Typographical Society. At the front end, we got a gilt bust of Benjamin Franklin, one of the fathers of independence.
And he spent a lot of time in France. We know something of the famous Mr. Franklin.
Ah.
But while recognizing that Franklin was a great man, why do you choose to carry his bust on the printer's wagon?
Because he was a printer himself. That's why. In this country, men can rise to greatness and still be proud of their old trades. Old Ben became a great man, but he was still a printer, trained. He got his education not in cloistered halls, but in front of a typecase.
Very extraordinary. And Benjamin Franklin was also a very witty author.
Well, that's what I'm telling you, gentlemen. I can see you don't quite understand the situation of a printer in America.
Evidently not.
Well, I'm a printer. I set type. I do odd printing jobs. But I bring out a newspaper. I collect the news. I write it up and I print it. I have my views about how things should be run, and they're pretty decided views. I write them down, and I print them.
So a printer is also an editor and a journalist.
That's what he is. Here. Here's a copy of my own paper. Read over the editorials at your leisure. You'll find some of them pretty stinging, I reckon.
I'm sure we shall.
Oh, these announcements of weddings.
Oh, that's a regular thing. Don't you have them?
Certainly, but what is this motto that you have placed at the head of the column?
That's a pretty good motto, eh?
The trap sprung, another fool caught.
My views on matrimony. I'm a confirmed bachelor.
As you please, but don't your readers object?
That's their right. An American editor is used to objections from the public. Favorite American pastime, trying to horsewhip the editor. And, of course, in some parts of the country, a lot of editors have to fight duels. Haven't fought any myself, but I have had something to do with readers objecting.
But this doesn't seem to worry you.
Why should it? If a man objects real hard, he can go and start his own paper.
In theory, yes, but can he really?
Of course he can. What do you suppose I did? It only costs a few $100s, and you're in business. The power of the press, gentlemen, is accessible to everyone. Now, let's have a look at this float of ours. The object in the middle is, of course, a printing press. It's a climber press, if you're interested in such things. And the bird flying over is...
The American Eagle.
Yeah, good for you.
Who is he carrying in his clothes? It looks like a bust.
It is a bust.
Of Benjamin Franklin again?
Yeah, good for you a second time. Now, you gentlemen being French, I shan't have to tell you what the scroll says in the bird's mouth.
Vérité sans peur.
Truth without fear.
Ah. A noble sentiment. Very appropriate.
But who are the figures that support all this splendor?
On the right, the goddess of liberty supporting the American flag.
Again, very appropriate. Yeah.
And on the left, the figure of a slave bound in chains. You'll observe the slave has burst the shackles on one arm and is reaching like toward the press for emancipation. That's where it'll come from, you know. And behind, there's a crown reversed and a broken scepter. All pretty much to the point when you know where it's supposed to be heading. All highly illustrative of the strength and universality of the power of the press.
The freedom of the press in America began with Jefferson, who was himself roasted on what he called the gridiron of the press. In countries where the doctrine of the sovereignty of the people ostensibly prevails, the censorship of the press is not only dangerous, but absurd.
Is it possible that the publication of facts, or even rumors, can have any tendency to defeat the general operation of justice? If this were true, the more utterly ignorant a man is, the fitter he is to sit as a juror. The honesty, the purity, the integrity of legal practice and decisions throughout the country are more indebted to the American press than to the whole tribe of lawyers and judges who issue their decrees. The press is the living jury of the nation.
When the right of every citizen to a share in the government of society is acknowledged, everyone must be presumed to be able to choose between the various opinions of his contemporaries and to appreciate the different facts from which inferences may be drawn. The censorship of the press and universal suffrage are two things which are irreconcilably opposed and which cannot long be retained among the institutions of the same people. Not a single individual of the millions who inhabit the United States has as yet dared to propose any restrictions on the liberty of the press.
Much of this became clear as we watched the press, both during our stay in America and later as the penny press began. Tocqueville and I were also instructed by Mr. J.G. Spencer, a most distinguished lawyer whom we met at Canandaigua in the state of New York. We asked Mr. Spencer what the influence of the press might be on public opinion.
Here in America, we enjoy all the benefits and advantages of a vicious free press. Let me answer you, Mr. Beaumont, by telling you about an editor I know who always says he makes a moral distinction between telling lies in conversation and telling lies in a newspaper, where everybody expects them.
Then we must not believe what we read in a newspaper?
In a newspaper, no. You may be deceived. In the press as a whole, things may be different. Every point of view is represented so strongly that in the midst of the lies and abuse, you can often make out the drift of the truth. Enlightenment through deceit, you could call it.
Under these circumstances, Mr. Spencer, does the press have any influence?
It has a great influence.
but it does not exercise it in the same manner as in France. Thus, we attach very little value to the opinions of the journalist. He obtains influence only through the facts which he makes known and the turn he gives them. It's in this way that he sometimes succeeds in misleading opinion about a man or a measure.
What are the limits that you put on the liberté of the presse?
Our principle in this matter is very simple. Everything in the realm of opinion is perfectly free. In America, one could every day print that a monarchy is the best of all governments. But when a journal publishes calumnies, when it gratuitously attributes culpable intentions, then it is sued and ordinarily punished with a heavy fine.
What is, in your opinion, the way to diminish the influence of the periodical press?
I am completely convinced that the most effective of all is to multiply the number of newspapers as far as possible and sue them only in extreme cases. Their power diminishes as they become more numerous. With us, interests are divided in a thousand ways. There are no great centers of action.
As we have in Paris.
With us, it is almost impossible to agitate public opinion over a large area. The New York City newspapers have no more influence on us than those of the neighboring village. Another reason for the small influence obtained by journalists through the expression of their personal opinions is the ill use they put them to in the first years of the Republic. At that time, it was proved that most of them were in the pay of England. And from that time on, public confidence was taken away from them.
In some ways, then, the power of the press is greater in France than in America, and more dangerous for us.
After all, in America, the press is by no means all-powerful. Both Jefferson and Jackson, who is president at this very moment, were elected against the concerted advice of the press.
And yet the press in America remains so free. Is there ever a prosecution launched against it by the government?
By the government? Not since Jefferson. He instituted the freedom of the press. And it's reasonable, gentlemen. After all, it's logical.
How so?
Well, we Americans, having once admitted the doctrine of the sovereignty of the people, apply it with perfect sincerity. It was never our intention, out of elements which are changing every day, to create institutions that should last forever. And there is consequently nothing criminal in an attack upon existing laws, provided a violent infraction of them is not intended. We also believe courts of justice are powerless to restrain the abuses of the press without the loss of liberty. And that, as the flexibility of human language perpetually escapes judicial definition, offenses of this nature evade in some manner or other the long arm of the law.
If you see my darling with somebody new, keep it a secret, whatever you do. Why should you tell me and break my poor heart? Then foolish pride would just drive us apart. If you see my darling in some rendezvous, painting the town with a boy he once knew, pay no attention and just let it be, but keep it a secret from me. If you see my darling with somebody new, keep it a secret, whatever you do. Why should you tell me and break my poor heart? Then foolish pride would just drive us apart. If you see my darling in some rendezvous, painting the town with a boy he once knew, pay no attention and just let it be, but keep it a secret. from me.
Newspapers, therefore, become more necessary in proportion as men become more equal. To suppose that they only serve to protect freedom would be to diminish their importance. They maintain civilization. In democratic countries, newspapers frequently lead the citizens to launch together into very ill-digested schemes. But if there were no newspapers, there would be no common activity. The evil which they produce is therefore much less than that which they cure. I think that men living in aristocracies may, strictly speaking, do without the liberty of the press, but such is not the case with those who live in democratic countries. To protect every man's personal independence, I do not trust to great political assemblies, to parliamentary privilege, or to the assertion of popular sovereignty. All these things may, to a certain extent, be reconciled with personal servitude. But that servitude cannot be complete if the press is free. The press is the chief democratic instrument of freedom.
Mike Huckabee and Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Thank you very much, Chris. Great to be back.
As you rise in the polls, I don't have to tell you that your past is becoming more of an issue. It now turns out that when you ran for the Senate back in 1992, you called for quarantining AIDS patients. You opposed increased federal funding to find a cure. Do you stand by any of that now, Governor?
I called for quarantines. I'm going to simply say that that was exactly what I said. I don't run from it, don't recant from it.
Do you have HIV or
the AIDS?
Gross.
Then Mike Huckabee has the answer for you.
Huckabee's HIV Camp.
For the small price of your freedom and livelihood, you can enter into
Huckabee's HIV Camp.
Just listen to this compelling testimonial from a longtime camp survivor.
I got the HIV in the 80s due to my fondness for necrobestial anal butt sex, and I was immediately sent to Huckabee's HIV camp. I have to say, this has been the best experience of my whole life. There are so many dead animals around here to ass rape that the fun will never stop. Thanks, Huckabee.
What more can you ask from a compassionate presidential candidate? Get your filthy, contaminated ass over to
Huckabee's HIV Camp today.
I called for quarantines.
Assholism!
Are you tired of being alone? Not anymore. You can be Kenty's internet boyfriend. Just send Kenty an email or a voicemail declaring such, and a picture, and Kenty will proudly display his bevy of boyfriends in his special photo album. Now you can tell people you have a boyfriend. An internet boyfriend! There is no obligation to have sex with Kenty, go on dates, remember birthdays or anniversaries. It's that easy. Be Kenty's internet boyfriend today. And now, girls can join as well. Void where prohibited by law. Only on the Flata Show.
Just what love will do. Love may live a day or a life through.
William Shakespeare, King Henry VIII, Act 3, Scene 1. Orpheus with his lute made trees, and the mountain tops that freeze bow themselves when he did sing. To his music plants and flowers ever sprung as sun and showers there had made a lasting spring. Everything that heard him play, even the billows of the sea, hung their heads and then lay by. In sweet music is such art, killing care and grief of heart. Fall asleep,
or hearing die. You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
Tabitha, now Aunt Clara will tell you all about the first Thanksgiving. It was a blast. We ate for 3 days.
You were there?
Well, yes, of course.